Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost an hour on this Holy Thursday edition as we step into the triduum of our Easter season and celebrate Easter. My goodness, it's here, right? How did that happen? Where did the time go? I think those are the questions we ask often. But yes, even if, I saw this posted on Facebook earlier today, which I appreciate, even if you feel like you may have failed at your Lent, sometimes life itself is Lent, right? It can be that way. So it's a time, of course, for us to celebrate as we move into this time of Easter. And then, of course, I think a beautiful time of very deep reflection from this evening of Holy Thursday on through the Triduum into the celebration of Easter Sunday. So we'll talk a little bit about that this afternoon. Also, some interesting things I posted over on my Facebook page. One of the suspected, I think, confirmed, at least in the respect that he was killed in the attack in Brussels. One of the individuals, a Catholic school student. We'll talk about that. And interesting fallout from this North Carolina law on LGBT. We'll talk about that as well. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost hour. Holy Thursday, moving into the Easter weekend. We will not have live programming tomorrow afternoon. I should take some network programming tomorrow afternoon, as we do typically on Good Friday. So you can have that as you listen tomorrow. And the other interesting news that I posted over here has nothing to do with Easter, but iPhones apparently are getting smaller again. So that's the new thing. Right. So everything old is new again. And I guess I would kind of almost be fine with this as long as I had a really big magnifying glass. Right. If there was something that I could make the phone big enough to read, then I would be OK. But apparently it's for people who want one hand usage of their phone. They can't really handle the big iPhone 6 that way. And so smaller, quicker response, a cheaper phone, apparently, if you've got kids on the plan and maybe there's a way to help out with the budget a little bit there. But for me, I am not an iOS fan. I am not crazy about the iPhone. My wife has had a couple of them. I'm always helping her fix her iPhone or get it out of a jam or unbrick it or whatever the case may be, delete a bunch of stuff so there's opportunity for it to work, you name it. And it just seems problematic to me. Now, I say that as I sit in front of a MacBook, because I am an Apple computer fan. I love computers made by Apple. I have since they began making them. But I have no love for the iPhone. I know it's very bizarre. So I think it's kind of the fact that I'm 50-50 left brain, right brain, right? So there's like a part of me that appreciates Android for what it is and a part of me that appreciates Apple for what it is, just in different areas, depending. Because as I'm not a PC guy, right? So weird. I know. What do you do? I mentioned this as we started the show, and this is I think as we see this headline, it's almost scandalous. I don't think I would go that far, but I just think it's enticing perhaps to see this, and it could be presented as, well, look what these guys produced. And I say this as I shared this on my Facebook page. The headline is, one of the suspected Brussels suicide bombers was a, quote, model student at the Catholic school he attended. And this is a Reuters report that is being reposted by Business Insider, and Ingrid Melander is the author here. And essentially, you know, it talks about the fact that there are many Muslim students in Brussels who do attend Catholic school. And I don't think that they're necessarily knocking Catholic schools in this headline, but it could kind of look that way as well, perhaps. So that's certainly, if you read the story, it's not necessarily what it's saying. But I think what it shows us is really the bigger picture here of how no one is immune. I don't care what formation someone has had in their life, and we pray, of course, that the Catholic education that someone has sticks with them and is more than just a, which in the story they talk about the kind of education that comes from Catholic school being appreciated by the Muslim community as well, and more so because it's a private school than because it's Catholic, of course. But we know that there's a percentage of Catholic school families who fall into that category regardless of their faith perspective. But what is interesting in this story is that it does, as brief as it is, give a bit of a profile of who this young man was and what he became. And I think that's the most, probably the most chilling of all of this. And I think this is true. Again, the picture is bigger here. It's not just radicalized young people who turn to this radical terrorism. I think any of our young people, as we know, at the age of tremendous vulnerability, which can be anywhere from preteen these days to 40, quite honestly, right? At what point does someone kind of grow up and become an adult and take responsibility for themselves? It takes a long time for some, but, and it begins very early, this attitude of rebellion and embracing things that are dangerous and counter to whatever it is that they have been raised with, right? I think that this happens. And, you know, so if you look at this, I mean, I think it's, I've said this for a long time. I said that there's a profile of these kids, and they're kids, right? They're typically young 20-somethings. And at this point, it's been male or female. We've seen American youth become radicalized. We see it in European youth. And what is happening, as we saw happen over the past few years, these kids who are somehow indoctrinated, enamored by this ideal, they travel to Syria. There they become radicalized, and they come back to their Western roots. And I almost think it's chartable in many of these cases to see that this is what has happened. It's that they have been almost a suburban kid who then gets this radical seed implanted into them some way, somehow, whether it's through their internet, friends and connections, and finding the propaganda, being attracted to it, and then going to get the training and coming back and planting these seeds. Now, what's interesting, now, whether you can believe this, and you know, I remember the report just a couple of days ago before the Brussels attack talking about this, the suspected Paris attacker who they found in Brussels saying, well, you know, this is great because we're going to get all this intelligence information. Well, good luck with that, right? I don't know that people always talk. And he says he wasn't aware of any plot of this nature taking place. Sure, right? Why would he say he was aware of this? Why would he reveal anything? And just because they captured this guy does not mean they're necessarily going to get adequate information from him. I think that's foolish to think that just because someone is in captivity that you get every piece of intelligence out of them and you're going to be able to crack every terror cell that they were associated with. That's not going to happen. May keep him out of that, but that's about it. But still, let's say that that's accurate, which could be, right? It could be. It could be that there are these operatives that are completely unrelated. And just because ISIS comes in and says, yes, this is one of ours, does not mean that there's any real masterminding connected sort of, this is all part of a structure. I mean, if you recall the horrid scourge that we had, and I say had, and unfortunately these things still occur to some degree, even in recent years, but I was in youth ministry working with teenagers as a young adult myself in the mid-90s when we started having a rash of school shootings. And you recall that there was it just seemed one after the other. And it was a very similar sort of profile. Granted, these young suburban kids who, for all intents and purposes, they have everything. No reason why they would ever turn to violence or do anything of this nature. But some way, somehow, a seed got planted in them that this was something they needed to do. And it's almost similar when you see these Western kids doing things of this nature in their hometowns and really turning it. I mean, it's domestic terrorism, regardless of whether they got their training in the Middle East or not, it doesn't matter. And again, as we look at this, I think we have to kind of see that there are interesting profiles here, and it's something that, unfortunately, even kids who were educated in Catholic school, and maybe even, who knows, right? Who knows how influenced this young man was, maybe even got a lot out of his Catholic education and the Catholicity of his education as a Muslim, still being susceptible to this. And I think the same susceptibility is there in so many ways. It doesn't have to be this violent, this radical. Young people so susceptible to so many influences that it can almost be a turn overnight of good kid to troubled kid simply because of the influences and the willingness to allow themselves to be open to that. And how do we protect that? How do we prevent that? I don't know there's an answer. I don't know there's ever been an answer, right? We go back to Cain and Abel. Could we have done something different there? What was it, bad parenting? What do you do with that? And unfortunately, it seems as though there's a percentage and a statistic that just shows up, regardless of what environments you try to prepare and protect and hedge and build, things like this can still happen. Maybe you think I'm oversimplifying. More to come. We'll be back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost hour. Our last live show this week before we head into the Easter weekend and back with live programming next week. So wishing you a happy Easter and certainly a fruitful conclusion here to Lent with ideally an opportunity to go deeper and grow more in our faith. That's what it's all about. Saw this the other day and I thought, well, that's interesting. Is this what sci-fi has been predicting since, oh my goodness, the dawn of sci-fi, right? The robot army taking over. Robots getting smart and deciding that humans are unnecessary. Because the technology is out there to create human-looking, very realistic robots who, of course, are supposed to be helpers in our house. Now, we also know that the porn industry and the sex trafficking industry essentially has created demand for this product as well. More realistic, more human-like, of course. And then The Atlantic is talking about why we need cuddly robots, because we're physical people who need physical touch. It's like your pets, your lap dog, the animals that we touch and play with, that the robots would have a similar sort of companion type of connection. So it's a weird world. I think we can undoubtedly see that. We're moving into a very bizarre and I'm not one to say social media has taken away all human interaction. I don't believe it. I think I interact more frequently with friends than I ever have before. And it's an interesting, it's like they're always there, right? It's just this kind of, we touch base with a comment or this or that, and we kind of keep an eye on each other's lives through our Facebook posts and pages. And I think it's an interesting dynamic. Now, I will admit it was very interesting the first time seeing a friend that I hadn't seen in many years after having followed them on Facebook. That reunion was not quite the same as it would have been, I believe, otherwise. But still, it's I'm not one to say we've ruined all human interaction. But it's interesting to think that while we're more disconnected physically with humans, we now are thinking about being more connected physically with robots, which, again, welcome to the 21st century now. We got jetpacks, robots, flying cars will have to be coming very soon, I'm convinced. This is an interesting sign of the times as well, and this was from the Daily Beast. I put it over on my Facebook page, North Carolina's anti-LGBT law based on a total lie, it says. And we've seen this in other states. We've seen it in our own state here in Kentucky, where essentially there's almost allowable discrimination. And there's been so much of this back and forth that it's no wonder we're kind of at this point, right? We overcorrect, we steer way off course in a hope to avoid whatever we've steered into. And then we'll eventually kind of find the median again. But this seems to be, in my opinion, a disturbing trend. Because as Catholics, if you read the Catechism, if you understand what our church actually says about people of LGBT, and I don't think it necessarily addresses it from that standpoint, but it's certainly implied, anyone in this same-sex attraction, we are to treat them with equal dignity of anyone else and not have a unjust discrimination placed upon them or against them. Now, the argument here, and if you read the article Jay Mickelson has written, you'll see that the concern is that now, because it was essentially based on this bathroom usage that got people upset. And essentially because of this, now there's an opening to say, well, we can discriminate for any reason. We can not hire and or fire based on sexual discrimination, or we can prevent housing, you name it. Like the list goes on and on, because apparently the bloat of this bill that offered this. But the other thing, I mean, simply, we've seen this as well. If somebody wants to deny service to someone based on their sexual orientation, they can do that as well, which there's a very challenging dynamic as we go down this road, because we've got to understand the dignity of individuals. We also have to understand the value structure of those of us who support things like traditional marriage, to understand why we support it, especially those of us as Catholics who understand marriage as a sacrament and why that is a sacrament. And we can have marriage as a sacrament between one man and one woman and still have treatment of dignity of every individual. That we don't have to say, well, I won't serve you, or I won't allow you the rights of everyone else. And I know that's hard to imagine. There are those like, well, there's something contradictory there. And I've had those conversations. But I encourage you to explore this more, because if you see the Catholic perspective, it actually makes sense. It's balanced. And it's in a way that is very contradictory to almost anything else that's out there that I found, where we can exalt and uphold something like a sacramental marriage, and at the same time say we don't believe in unjust discrimination against those of same-sex attraction. People find that oxymoronic or perhaps contradictory, but it's not. And then as you read on in this article, again, they talk about this transgendered bathroom usage, and this apparently being one of the challenge points that put this into play, that then got the attention and got the votes on the floor that put this through the state's legislature in North Carolina. That this brings back to me, as I've said many times, why is this even an issue, right? Why does this have to be an issue? Why do we think that we have to go together in the bathroom with strangers? We don't even do this with people we know, really, right? I mean, am I wrong about this? Should we be expected? Why do we treat, there's something undignified in this, I think. But it's just what we do, right? We're kind of forced into this. And again, I've shared, going to college, I didn't play sports in high school. I played golf, okay? I was on the golf team. We didn't go take showers after a round of golf. I'm sorry. That didn't happen. No. We just got in our cars and went home. Okay. See you tomorrow. You know? All right, hit the showers, boys. There was none of that from the coach. Take a knee. No, we never took a knee in golf. We played our golf. We played our matches. And we weren't necessarily hot and sweaty because, you know what? We're playing golf. So I never had this experience until I got to college. And I'm thinking, why am I forced to do this, right? Why is this part of my college experience? Why do I have to walk into a room with six shower heads sticking out of the wall? Why do I have to do that? Why is this part of anything that I have to endure as a college student? It's creepy. It's weird, right? I remember this as a kid in elementary school, going to the bathroom for the first time. I didn't pee in a trough at home. I didn't do that, right? This was not part of what I experienced. Why am I forced to do this? So I think that maybe we've got a really weird cultural thing when it comes to putting people together in places that were not necessarily intended to be anyway. I mean, I grew up in the country. We still went behind the tree. Behind the tree, not out in front of everyone. So if this is the hinge point of this legislation, maybe we need to rethink our bathrooms. Maybe we could build them a little bit differently, right? I've shared before going to Europe And there's not a there is a bathroom stall, but it's got a door that goes all the way to the floor, and it's got walls that go all the way to the floor and ceiling. Right? What is it? Is it that tough to extend the door and walls a couple of more feet? Right? And it's not just a thin piece of metal with all kinds of cracks around the thing where you can see through it. It's a room. You go into a room. And it's private, like it should be. Maybe I've got some issues, but I don't think I'm the only one. Somewhere along the way, we decided that there was something okay about this communal experience if you're of the same gender. It's supposed to be completely natural? Really? I don't think so. So again, if this is our hinge point, what the legislation I want is redesign the bathrooms, you know? Redesign the showers. How about a little bit of privacy? Can we do that in public? Can we do that in our dorms? Then guess what? These problems go away. Who cares? Oh, it's unisex. You just go in there. Yeah, it has a door. Yeah, that locks, and it's just you. There's just one shower head in there. There's just one toilet in there, right? Jeez, what have we done? More to come in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit BreadboxMedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Follow me over on Facebook. You'll find the things we talk about over there. And I'm going to have to put Father Michael White up there because he's our guest right now. Father, how are you?
Happy Holy Thursday, Leo.
Yeah. Well, it's a busy time. I'm surprised that you were actually even able to be with us today because you got to be going crazy, right? I mean, come on.
No. We have so much help here I'm happy to be able to sit back and talk to you today.
Good. Well, that's good to know. So, but it is a busy weekend. You guys kind of go all out, and you've got like extra space and all that kind of your Easter service, right?
For Easter Sunday, yeah, we do. We have video venues. We have seating in six different locations here on our campus. People are going in every direction.
Now, how many do you expect to attend over the weekend, do you know?
Oh, probably about 6,000.
Oh, my goodness, wow. Yeah. That's amazing. And do you have baptisms? Do you have...
We have baptisms at the Easter Vigil, mm-hmm. and confirmation, mm-hmm. and First Communions, I suppose.
Yeah.
So that all happens at the... at the Easter Vigil, and then, mm-hmm. of course, as everywhere, we renew our baptismal promises, and we're, mm-hmm. sprinkled with the Easter water on Sunday morning.
Yeah, which continues then on throughout the rest of the Easter season, right?
In many places, yes. Yeah. That is a great custom.
Yeah. Now, is that something you guys do or not?
We've done it differently, okay. from year to year.
All right. So it's not something you have to do. It's an option that you can use.
That's right. It's one of the options of the entrance rite.
Right.
Yeah.
So how's Lent been? Have you had a good one? You think it's worked out well?
Life?
Lent. Oh, so you're saying life is Lent.
I see. I think I did pretty well. I think the last time I talked to you, I was kind of struggling with, well, what was I giving up? Mm-hmm. What was, mm-hmm. I being consistent about?
Right.
And I think it turned out to be one of those Lents where I was consistently inconsistent, but had some good days and experiences, and I think made a good, sustained effort at prayer through the season. And you might say, well, you're a priest. You should, you know, that shouldn't be a problem for you. But truth is, everybody struggles with commitment and discipline.
Well, I think when our catechism refers to prayer as a spiritual battle, that in of itself is comforting, right? It's tough for us all. I mean, I don't think anybody really does it. Maybe there are some who just, you know, it's like breathing pure oxygen to them in a prayer life, but it's never been that way for me. I mean, it's always a challenge.
Right. I think that most everyone would say that too. And that's encouraging to know.
Yeah, well, it's encouraging to hear from a priest as well to say, you know, I've been up and down in Lent, and I've had my good days and my bad days. I think that's important for us to know as well.
But like any discipline, it builds on itself too. And the more you do it, the better you're going to be at it. The easier it's going to be. And that's why Lent is such a welcome opportunity for us. And also, just, you know, even if Lent wasn't very successful for you, the next 3 days are a kind of a spiritual exercise or retreat that the Church gives to us. You know, even if you haven't done anything getting ready for Easter up until now, you can use these next 3 days as a kind of intense period of prayer and preparation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a beautiful experience. So tonight you guys will do the Holy Thursday. Do you do a foot washing? Is that what you do at the...
We do, and it's really inspiring, and I just think the Holy Thursday liturgy is just... it's so mystery-laden, and it's you imagine that moment just before everything just kind of kicks into action, and it's just kind of like this intensely mysterious, mystery-laden moment where Christ is introducing the apostles to the mystery of the Eucharist and to what he's going to accomplish on the cross, and they're not understanding any of it, but sensing that this is a different moment. Mm-hmm. It's really a great service.
Yeah.
And did you see the Pope today?
No, I didn't. What was he saying?
He was celebrating Mass at a refugee.
I knew he was supposed to do that. Yeah, I didn't see it. Yeah, so he washed the feet of the refugees.
He was washing feet of refugees.
Wow.
Not all of whom were even Catholic.
Right. Yeah. Well, I talked a little bit about this yesterday. We see this in John's Gospel, this understanding of the washing of the feet, which we don't see in the others. And really, this is what a Eucharistic experience looks like, right? When we are truly transformed into service of others, when we leave that experience, right? When we leave that experience of the celebration of Mass, when we're sent forth, it really should be nothing but foot washing until we're back the next time. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what our lives should look like, but we don't do that well.
Yeah, that's right. It's a celebration that leads to service.
Right.
What does the Church say? It's the source. It should be the source and the summit of a whole life lived in service.
Right. Which then again looks like what we see reflected on this Holy Thursday. And I think that it's easy to kind of think, well, this is it's a ceremony. It's reflective. Okay, it's kind of the anniversary of the priesthood, whatever, and we can kind of detach ourselves from that as opposed to immersing ourselves in this, which is what I think you're encouraging us to do, Father, but this intensity of saying, how do I live this, right? How do I live this? And if we're able to do that, now we're at least getting more on the right track, regardless of whether we messed up Lent or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said.
So 6,000 between the Saturday vigil and then how many services will you guys have on Sunday?
We'll do three. We have a fourth Mass, but we offer that very early in the morning for our volunteer ministers who are going to come and be working the rest of the day.
Oh, wow.
So we have a Mass for them first thing on Easter Sunday morning, and that lets them go to Mass with their families and helps us kind of like get ready for the big crowds that'll come a little later in the morning.
I've never heard of a church doing that would just give a special Mass to those who are going to be busy all day. That's great.
Yeah, it's kind of an incentive to get people signed up to help us out.
You get your own mass. The first one of Sunday morning. That's terrific. Well, I posted the link to your website to churchnativity.tv over there on my Facebook page, so we can see what you guys are doing. And we've talked a lot about how you guys have kind of become at least a bit of a model when it comes to the way to do what I would say is a different approach when it comes to evangelization, Catholic evangelization, using the tools obviously that are there. You're not reworking these tools, be it the Holy Thursday experience or Good Friday or the Vigil or Easter, but you're just opening up an opportunity for there to be maybe even for the first time someone to come into this environment and go, okay, so that's what this Catholic thing is all about. Right?
That's right. Sure.
Yeah. And you've proven, I think, that that's one of the things that impressed me, and that's why we've had so many conversations since I read the book Rebuilt, is that it may have taken you 10 years, but there's proof in that pudding that shows that you got 6,000 people coming to Easter Mass, right? I mean, that's pretty amazing, and that kind of shows that something's happening there that is inviting and is opening a door and opening this glimpse in to see what we're all about. I think that's amazing and beautiful.
Right. And, that's great for us. But the fact of the matter is that this Sunday at every Catholic church in this country, there will be people coming who are giving us a fresh look.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Haven't been around for a long time. It's their first time in a long time or their first time ever. And it's up to us as Catholics who love our church to be welcoming and hospitable to them.
Yeah.
And all of us can take on that job.
Yeah, we can. We could. We have the opportunity, yes. But yeah, I think often about that illustration in the book, where I think it's a Christmas Eve celebration that you're talking about, where the ushers reserved their seats.
There were their seats, yeah. and the visitors were left standing.
Something tells me that doesn't happen at Church in the Nativity anymore. There's no ushers reserving
Hopefully it doesn't. But, think about giving up your seat to the newcomer who maybe would be left standing in the back, or parking in a parking spot that's, a little further away from the church so that the newcomer can pull up closer. Those are little things that we can do. Smile at people who are obviously guests at your church. Mm. Welcome them.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, all of these things that can be done, if only we would, but unfortunately, we know that there, we call these people Christmas and Easter Catholics or Christers or you name it, and that's an unfortunate thing as well, that we even have to label those who only show a couple of times a year as anything other than just welcome them and invite them back next week, right? I mean, wouldn't that be beautiful?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Father, you guys have done tremendous work, and it's exciting to hear what's going on. And again, we'll keep an eye. Do you do anything on your website with the broadcast of the Mass? Are you doing that with any video?
Yeah, it'll be live streamed.
Okay, yeah, good deal.
Yeah,
all right,
all of them. So check us out if you like churchnativity.tv.
Awesome. All right, Father, we're running out of time. God bless you. Happy Easter to you.
Blessings for Easter.
Thank you. More to come. We'll be back next week. Yes, happy Easter to you. God bless you. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Thank you for listening.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.